Headliner Radio, the creative voice.
Today we're welcoming British songwriter and music producer Peter Rycroft onto the podcast, better known as Lost Boy. He's become one of the most in-demand writers and producers of recent times and has worked with Tiësto, Rita Ora, Bebe Rexha, Ellie Goulding, Louis Capaldi, Anne-Marie and Little Mix, not to mention a little track you may have heard of called Padam Padam by Kylie Minogue, which he co-wrote and produced and won a Grammy for Best Pop Dance Recording. Dubbed the Song of the Summer in 2023, Padam Padam went to number one in the UK, was certified platinum by the Australian Recording Industry Association, gold by the BPI, became a cultural phenomenon, spawned thousands of memes and TikToks, and did the impossible, provided Kylie with a hit catchier than 2001's Can't Get You Out of My Head. Despite the internet going crazy for it, UK radio were resistant to playing the song. Peter joins us today, almost a year since Padam Padam was released, to talk about how the song that has been stuck in all of our heads since May 2023 came together. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining today. How are you doing on this aggressively windy spring day we're having?
I'm very well. I know it's kind of like, I don't know how to dress anymore. We were like lulled into a false summer and now I'm shivering again.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I always see the memes about spring, full spring, or whichever way around it is. I think we're in the full spring at the moment, aren't we? It's not really here, but we thought it was for one
day. The pseudo spring. Yeah,
exactly. I know when it's starting to hot up a little bit, our tortoise wakes up, and then I feel very sorry for her because then it gets really miserable again. We have to bring her back inside. But tortoise tails.
So she's come out of hibernation, and she's like,
always around Easter, and I just feel so bad for her because I say it's the full spring flash, and then she has to go back inside again, not properly, but just while she defrosts. But I could tell you more about the tortoise, but let's talk about you. Enough about the tortoise.
Next time.
So I know you work on a lot of projects with loads of different artists. Just like paint a little picture of what you're up to now, so we get a little snapshot into your life. What are you working on at the moment? What am I catching you in the middle of? If you're allowed to say that, it's don't break any NDAs.
I mean, yeah, that's always the thing I'm nervous about, is because I've done that. I've put my foot in it before in interviews. So I mean, a lot of the same stuff. I'm so lucky to work across quite a wide variety of genres, and I sort of always wanted to do that, really, and that's kind of partly where the name Lost Boy comes from. But yeah, real mix of things, a lot of pop, a lot of like songwriter projects. There's a few artists that I work with regularly that I'm still working with now. But yeah, lots of stuff coming, more with Kylie, more with Griff, and working on Tiësto stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that I've been involved with before that's coming back around again, and a lot more new things that I don't know if I can talk about.
Okay, well, more with Kylie, that's very interesting. Are you sure you're allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, probably not, but it's fine. No,
we'll
I'm sure
skim,
it's fine.
We'll
I think people have worked it out from Instagram stories and stuff, so it's out there.
Okay, well, that leads me seamlessly into asking you about Padam Padam, because I know your time is precious, so let's just delve right in. It is almost a year since the song was released. I looked that up earlier, which is mad.
God.
It seems like there is not a day where I don't hear it, although perhaps it's just inside my own head, especially today, as I know I'm interviewing you. It's just all day.
You're possessed by Padam.
I am actually possessed by it, and I know the whole world is as well. It's not just me, but do you find yourself humming it or singing it as much as the rest of us? Are you immune?
Absolutely not. I mean, I love it, obviously, but I've heard it so much now. I think, with all these songs that come out, that I think the producer and people that have worked on them have heard them thousands of times before they come out, and then when it came out, I wasn't really sure what that song was going to do. I wasn't really expect anything, but wasn't expecting anything. And then I just remember almost off the bat seeing like memes and just like funny little things that people were making to the song, and suddenly I realized that it was sort of, because sometimes songs come out and do their thing, and this one, it just felt different. Like it had a full life behind it, and people were sort of really having fun with it, which is kind of what you need for songs to work these days. But I don't think anyone was expecting it necessarily. It was a surprise to all of us, a nice surprise.
Well, they certainly had fun with it. I've got a lot of questions to ask you about this, about all sorts. But first thing, I have to congratulate you on the Grammy for the song. So Best Pop Dance Recording. Many congratulations.
Thank you.
And how was the night? Crazy. Do you ever get used to going to things like that? You know, rubbing shoulders with, you know, the Beyoncés of the world?
No, I can't. No, is the short answer. I don't get used to it. But I also can't help but feel like I'm in some sort of like weird, awkward British sitcom or something, like where there's like the awkward Brit who's like bumping into all these incredible people. Try my best to turn it on a bit and be like, cool guy, producer for those events. But it's always a bit overwhelming. And that, particularly the Grammys, I mean, that's just like, you know, that's sort of bucket list stuff for all of us. And again, we just weren't expecting it to win. I mean, the nomination alone was such a huge honor. And when it won, it was just sort of so surreal that I basically just blacked out and found myself on stage.
Being led up there.
Yeah. And the walk to stage was horrific. I felt like forever. I got up there and she wasn't on stage with me. So it was just me accepting the award, which was so bizarre. And I wasn't expecting to have to speak or anything. And like I said, I wasn't expecting it to win. So it really was just like panic stations. And luckily some words came out that were sort of mildly coherent.
Have you been able to watch it back, or is that for another time?
I have watched it, but yes. My mum posted it on Facebook straight away.
Proud mum.
So I had to watch it back, unfortunately.
Okay, love that.
So I look composed, but you can see the panic in my eyes. Mm. It's hard to watch.
I love that whatever your job is, the mums of Facebook are out there sharing all sorts, including their proud moments.
They won't be stopped.
Their children. Yes. Where was Kylie tamed. Then? Was she not there? I thought she was.
She was there. I don't know. I think she was getting ready for the main, because this award is presented in the pre-televised ceremony. And it's live online, but it's not like the big one with, you know, with like that, all the performances. That's for like the big four and a few others. So I think that she was just getting ready for the main event, because she was obviously going to be on TV, and I don't know, not quite sure. And I did ask her that when I saw her.
Didn't make the main broadcast.
Well, there's about 90 categories, and the majority of them aren't. So I'm not offended. I'm not offended. In fact, I'm very grateful that I wasn't on national television.
In the United States. It was up, you know, it had some strong competition in the dance world, certainly. You know, it's up against David Guetta, Calvin Harris, big names everyone will know in the dance world, whereas, you know, this is more of a, let's just call it a crossover hit for Kylie, in that it's not her usual genre, even though it pigeonholed her a bit. So, you know, were you just completely gobsmacked then, not even expect, were you just kind of there just for the night, just to enjoy?
I mean, it was a mass. It's sort of the inaugural year of that category. So the first time they've done that pop dance award, which was also a massive honor. But strangely for me, I wrote the Calvin song that was nominated as well. So I also had that one in the sort of like in the category. And genuinely, I just was sort of completely overwhelmed when the nominations came out. But to have two out of five, I think it is, was just so bizarre. I think what it came down to, if I'm honest, and I, you know, don't want to read into like how they judge these things, and it's all the committee doing their things, but Kylie is just such an icon, and to have a moment like this after in such a long career and to sustain it is something that needs to be sort of
studied.
to be awarded. not what I wanted to say, but something along those lines. Like, it, you know, it's just an amazing feat.
Yeah. And where do you keep the Grammy? Where have you got it?
It hasn't arrived yet. Sorry. I'd show you it.
Taking its sweet time, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got like the envelope that they open on stage that says Padam Padam, which is that's kind of more fun. But yeah, they're supposedly sending it in the post.
Okay.
Hopefully not Royal Mail.
Yeah, or Ivory. Hopefully they don't just chuck it to the garden wall and run away.
Throw it behind the bins.
Left behind, wheelie bin. Okay. let's get into how the song came together. So, of course, the song was produced by yourself and co-written with Ina. I know you would have spoken about this. Yeah, she is amazing, and her credits alone are phenomenal. I'm guessing you've probably, you know, always wanted to work with her. I know you would have spoken about this a lot, so I hope you can humour me in telling me about, you know, how you both wrote this song in a day. I kind of read that you got together over a weekend and nothing really came about the first day, and then it sort of came to you on the second day. So how did the idea start for the song?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, Ina's a legend. I've been a fan of hers for years, and I think what often happens is you get these, you know, I'll be like, I'd love to work with Ina, and then for whatever reason, she agrees, and we, you know, put 2 days in. And on that first day, I think often there's, you know, quite a lot of pressure, or not pressure from anyone else. And especially because we were writing for pitch, so it's sort of open day just to have fun and, like, you know, find something that feels interesting. But the first day, for whatever reason, we tried a few things. They weren't really clicking. Like, they were quite nice, but they weren't. I'm always trying to find a thing that is a sort of an obvious thing, in inverted commas, or like a moment, or just a thing that defines the song, whether that's a sound or a part of the top line. And on that first day, I didn't quite feel like we'd found anything like that. And then the second day, she was either running late or I came in a bit early, and I was just sort of desperately, you know, scraping around trying to find something that would, like, strike inspiration for both of us. And I started playing that weird little, like, plucky major minor progression thing that starts off the song, that kind of synth part. And I just had that, basically. And when she came in, I played her that, and neither of us really thought anything of it at the time. We were just like, yeah, sort of, because nice place to start, let's just sort of try some melodies, throw some things down. She's an amazing writer. Like, she has such a brand of top line, and she started doing her thing straight away. And I can't remember how we landed on Padam, but we were talking about the Edith Piaf record, which is like an old French record called Padam, and it's that sort of the, you know, when a word is represents the sound of something, there is a word for that.
Is it onomatopoeia?
Is it?
It might be, if I'm wrong.
Sounds legit.
Terrible, because that's been recorded.
Let's go with that.
Let's go with that, yeah.
That's okay. That's on you if that's wrong.
Okay.
So we were just trying to find something that, you know, represented a heartbeat, and we were sort of in this dark, like, flirty club land world, weren't really sure. I mean, the whole time we were just writing for pitch, right? So, like, in our heads, it's not, we weren't thinking we're gonna write a song for Kylie now. It was just a song for who knows who, you know. But interestingly, the day before, we'd both been talking about Kylie, and we'd been talking about Can't Get You Out of My Head, and the sort of repetitive nature of that, and the sort of major minor thing that is interesting in that. And I think it was more subconsciously than anything, but that maybe influenced what I started playing that morning before Ina turned up. If I don't know, it's easy to have these thoughts in hindsight. It might have just been random, but it sort of ended up going full circle.
Yeah, it sort of lodged in there. I was going to say, this is going to be the hookiest hook since La La La. I mean, the repetition of the Padam is just genius in a way. It just really lodges in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun. Ina's such a modern writer in the sense that she doesn't mind if, like, I fuck with the vocals. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
You're allowed to swear. Permission granted.
If I mess with the vocals, nice. She's very cool with that, and so she'll start putting things down, and then we're sort of chopping them up and rearranging a little bit. But the majority of stuff she was singing led us to the top line that we know and love, Padam. And it felt quite natural. But even when we were finished at the end of the day, I don't think either of us were sort of like, this is obviously a Kylie song. it just found its way to her.
Yeah, it did find its way to her. And it's just, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, you weren't thinking of where it was going. Maybe it could be a Eurovision song or might be good for Rita Ora. I don't know where I saw that. Yeah, how did it end up that Kylie heard it and ended up wanting to get on this track then?
I mean, the Eurovision thing, that feels like a bit of an insult to say. I didn't mean that. Like, I just thought this is such a fun, it's quite a camp sort of fun.
Yeah, that's how energy, I took it to mean. It energy. Is very camp. I mean, it definitely is.
And so I was just thinking who can pull that off in a way that's cool and not cheesy and can do it in a sort of tongue-in-cheek way and have fun with it when they need to. And I couldn't really think of anyone. So it sat around on a hard drive for like a year, maybe half a year. And then I had a meeting with a friend who's an A&R manager in the industry called Chris Wu. Shout out, Chris. And he is just a huge Kylie fan and a fan of all things camp. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. But he was like, "What? This would be amazing for Kylie. You should send it for Kylie." And so I did. And that was... And then it sat on her desk for a while, I think, and they weren't necessarily sure about it. And then eventually she heard it and took it for a spin and did her thing.
Okay. Well, that's good that she did. And if she hadn't recorded it, if you could have picked anyone, you know, even if it's not likely, you know, who would you have picked to do it if Kylie hadn't have been available, for instance?
Oh my God. What a question. It's so impossible. It's so impossible for me to think of anyone else singing it now.
I agree.
This is a bit of a sort of cop out of an answer, but Ina's demo is so sick that I would have been perfectly happy just releasing that with Ina, and her voice is so iconic. So the only version that I like as much as Kylie's is Ina's version, to be honest. And I'm not sure if anyone else could do it justice.
Okay.
So there you go.
And has that ever been, I know, not released or uploaded online so anyone could hear it? Is that out there at all for anyone to hear her version?
I hope not.
Oh, I meant legally.
That means I've been hacked. Yeah. I don't think so. I haven't shared it. I don't know. I mean, I could probably find it and send it to you. But I don't think it's publicly available.
Okay, no. I was just curious. So it was a little different, the song, you know, in terms of a sound for Kylie. So were you surprised that she responded so well to it?
Yes and no. I mean, it was different. But I think what Kylie's known for is being brave and sort of pushing the envelope a bit and trying things. She's always doing fun new pop.
Yes.
Ideas. And I think that so in that sense it wasn't surprising, because the fact that she was being brave and trying something different for her, it just sort of made sense in the sort of arc of her career to me, like from an outsider's point of view. And so no, I wasn't fully surprised, but it was a nice surprise that she was so up for it, for sure.
Mm. And like you touched on earlier, she's been doing this since the 80s and seems to get more and more popular. She's got her steady fan base and is amassing new fans, new generations as we go. But to still be getting top of the charts, you know, in her fifth decade. And it's just incredible, really, to watch, isn't it, that the power of one song can propel someone forward again that may take a little dip, as artists often do, in and out of the top spot or the limelight. So... yeah, I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, we owe a lot to the fans, and I think a really smart thing about that song. Oh, I'm not sure if it was smart or just sort of circumstantial, but it became a bit of a pride anthem, and that was such a fun thing for that song, and so fun to watch it. But that also just breathed life into even more life into this thing that already felt like a bit of a cultural bubble. It was just really good timing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, and Kylie is, of course, this gay icon. Padam Padam has been dubbed this anthem within the LGBT community, as you've, you know, touched on that. It's been played probably at every Pride event ever since. I know I've definitely heard it a lot at a few. And just how does it feel to have played such a part in making, you know, this celebratory gay anthem, and that's brought so much joy to so many people?
I mean, it feels, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's so... so fun to see. And I've seen it in so many different environments. And it's just one of those songs that seems to work, even if in places you wouldn't expect. And I think it's just because there's so much energy in the top line and the song. It's not too specific, so anyone can feel ownership over it. But it's just sort of, it straddles that line of dumb and hooky in a way that is kind of addictive. So
yes, I've seen as well, yeah, that Pajam's like sort of a gay code word for everything and nothing as well, which is another quite funny thing, yeah, that's come out of
so
it. People
funny.
Just answering questions with Pajam or just saying it in a knowing way to someone. I love
there was
that.
A petition to add it to the Oxford English Dictionary as well at one point, which is ridiculous.
Did
obviously.
It get added?
No. Well, as far as I know.
Well, it'd be a long entry, wouldn't it? Because I think it's open to interpretation,
yeah,
of what it
means.
But what does it mean? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it depends on the context of how someone says it.
Yeah, originally it's the onomatopoeic thing. And then now people just, you know, people will say that's so Pajam, or they'll answer the phone, Pajam, which is so fun.
That's great. I bet it's in the Urban Dictionary. You should check that out online.
It is. Yeah, I think it is.
I bet there's some unsavory entries on there, though, even though they are quite fun to read sometimes.
anyway. That's okay.
Go and look in your own time, everyone. I wanted to ask about like the catchiness and about writing, you know, a song with a hook. Of course, I'm sure everyone would love the magic recipe for this, but it does sort of capture this irresistible and unstoppable catchiness, a bit like Can't Get It Out of My Head, like you said. So what do you think is the secret to writing a catchy hit? Do you think it lies maybe in the simplicity of an idea in terms of combination of lyrics, simple melody? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I get asked this
a lot,
and I feel like the more I do it, the less qualified, the more I work, the more I write songs, the less qualified I am to answer. But I think the average person knows better than I do what a hit is, really. And that's where I'm trying to be in my head when we're making these songs, is just like how Sandra from Essex is going to feel when she hears this in W.H. Smith, or what, you know, whatever it is. I think if the science of, like I said earlier, that balance of perfectly dumb and perfectly smart, like somewhere in the middle of that is the sweet spot. And in this case, I think part of the sort of hypnotic elements of the top line, it's a very like circular top line, and it sort of resolves back where it started. So you can't help, I think that does something subconsciously where you can't help but sing along because you know it's coming again. You've come back to the home note. It's like da 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 da, and then we're back, and you're like, okay, it's coming again. So that maybe plays a part, and then you know, just the delivery of vocal. I'm obsessed with vocal production, so I think that makes so much more of a difference than people realize with songs connecting. And if you, I just had the session open in front of me now because I wasn't sure if you needed to see it or whatever. But it's so interesting because if you take all of the vocals out, the track itself, like the instruments and the drums, are so basic, and the vocal is really filling up, you know, if almost 50% of the song. So I think that plays into why it's so easy to sing along, because so much of it is vocal. But yeah, it's all well and good trying to put it into words, but at the end of the day, these things just sort of happen every now and then, and it feels like a little lightning bolt just sort of strikes you out of the sky at random. So yeah, that wasn't a very like solid answer.
I think it was pretty solid, and it's made me think of something. I'm thinking it fades out, doesn't it, the song? It doesn't abruptly end.
It sort of has what you would call, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting point. No one has ever asked me about that, but it has almost like an extended mix feel at the end. So when a DJ if you're making a song for a DJ, often you'll do an extended mix with like 8 or 16 bars at the end, where it's just sort of like instrumental and drums, and then it fades to just drums, and that's so that they can mix from one record into the next. So it sort of has that feel at the end. It's like just the bass and the drums rolling around for like 8 or 16 bars, which obviously this is not like some super credible like underground club record, but just weird little elements like that I think help to add some credibility to a song that is otherwise super shiny pop, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I'm always curious when I hear songs that fade out other than ones that just end, like how do you come to that decision to choose one or the other?
I mean,
because sometimes,
honestly,
I think be decisive and just end, you know, not that this one needs to do that, just in general.
Yeah, just get it over with. God. I mean, I think if I'm totally honest, that is just how it was in the demo, because I was like, who knows where this is going to go now? Like maybe there's a bridge, or maybe it just, I'll just sort of leave a gap so that people can imagine something. And it just ended up staying that way. And it's a lot of, weirdly, a lot of people have said like that they love the outro, and that they sort of, that's just a fun bit where everyone, it's almost like a dance break. So I also think it's similarly to what I said about the top line, where it's like this circular thing, that the end of the song kind of implies that as well. It's like, you're so familiar with it by then, and it's sort of ending instrumentally how it started instrumentally, not the same elements, but it's still just like an instrumental moment with the poem. And so sort of subconsciously you're like, oh, it's playing again, or maybe I will play it again.
Well, it's quite fitting, because it does seem to go on and on, and it certainly hasn't really left. I hear it all the time still, so yeah, it's a good reason. It's quite full circle, let's just say.
There you go.
See what I did there. I saw as well, it was very one of the last tracks added to the album, and obviously it became the lead single, so that was a good call, right?
Great call. I don't know, that is sort of the way I work often. I don't know why, but I think I just grew up in a, I've always sort of thought of myself as maybe more of a like US facing producer writer, and so just by the nature of living in London is that the first few years of my career, basically all of it was just me like hurling songs over the Atlantic hoping for the best. And so often I'll do that with artists as well, and it's not the first time that is sort of like come in right at the end of the album cycle and just sort of like sniped one right at the end, which is, it's really fun to sort of to do that. And I think sometimes a fresh perspective right at the end is a super healthy thing for an artist when they're writing an album.
Okay, let's talk about the memes. So many memes. Obviously, the song exploded on TikTok as well as memes. But, do you get sent them as well by all your friends? And do you have a personal favorite?
I do get sent them. The one I mentioned earlier where someone's picking up the phone and they just say, "Badam," that one, it's not the most creative meme, I understand that, but I was just like, this is so, it's such a basic interaction that everyone does, and if that catches on, it's sort of like game over. So I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah,
but I love them all. I love all my memes equally.
What have we become, a generation of people that look at memes? But it's just the way jokes are sort of told these days. Well, I love it. I actually looked at a few earlier as research strictly, and I was actually laughing. And there was one, it was elderly millennial gays educating Gen Z gays on how to badam badam, and it's Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle dancing around with this elderly baby sister.
There you go.
And the Arrival film
passing
one.
Passing it on to the next generation.
Amy Adams holding up the sign that says padam and the aliens. It's padam.
Oh, yeah. So good.
So ridiculous.
So good. I think I saw a Love Actually one as well, where he's holding up signs and one of them says padam.
All of them.
All of them.
Oh, God. Yeah. Amazing. The internet works in mysterious ways, indeed. All right. I also read as well about the radio, so you probably know what I'm going to say here, but I had not known about this, and, a lot of things about big songs become common knowledge. Well, I hadn't heard that, you know, Radio 1 and Capital weren't playing it, even though, you know, it was going viral, it was really popular, which many people, you know, attributed to maybe ageism, sexism, and, you know, Kylie's, well, she doesn't look it, she is in her 50s, and probably they assume the younger audience they target, because obviously we know Radio 1 does this, you know, maybe they wouldn't want to hear it. You've been quite vocal about how that played out, and you pointed out these stations regularly play David Guetta, who's actually a year older than Kylie today. So how frustrating was that when they weren't playing what was arguably the biggest song of the summer?
I mean, it was just a bit of a wake-up call that, you know, I've been aware of that for a long time, but to see it happen, you know, even when the song was doing its thing naturally, was pretty disappointing. I mean, I wasn't that, I was more upset for Kylie, just because it, you know, and for the fans, to be honest, because they were all begging Radio 1 to play it, just because you want to hear your favorite song on the radio, and it just felt a bit like a bit too obvious, that the ageism, sexism thing. It was just clear as day suddenly to me. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, no one should really have a problem calling that out. It's just a thing that unfortunately has been ingrained in society for so long that it just happened. It still happens. And the David Guetta example was not, you know, no shade to David. I love David. And he's, you know, I've worked with David. He's amazing. And age just has nothing to do with it for him. But if you're a woman, suddenly it does. And that's just not fair. So I think there was a, you know, small victory in the end, and it was playlisted at Radio 1, but I think it could have had much more of a life there if they'd joined the party a bit earlier.
They did eventually cave, as you said, and added the song, but I mean, did it feel a bit like a hollow victory at that point?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I never am sort of like watching these things necessarily or like feeling personally hurt by it, but I was aware of it because of the conversations we were having, and it just felt ridiculous, really, was the vibe.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, so a bit more on the production side of things. So it's an electro-inspired dance pop, bit of a synth pop track, and it's, you know, clocking in a punchy 2 minutes, 46 seconds long. So, you know, it's easily digestible. Can you tell me a bit about the approach to the production side of things, and, you know, where did you start and how did you shape the sound?
Yeah, so it all sort of started with that main plucky synth thing that I started with. And we just sort of built it from there gradually. There's a lot of sort of dark industrial sounds in it. And I was listening to a lot of sort of like dark, like Gesaffelstein and random sort of dark electronic productions at the time. And so that definitely influenced the sound of it. And then also, just like I said earlier, so much of it is built from the vocal itself. So the low padam that you hear becomes an instrument in a way. It's sort of like the padam dum, the dum of the end of that phrase is sort of chopped and used as a sort of like tonal note that shifts around on the snare, and just adds to the sort of weird like blending of instruments and vocal. And then apart from that, it's a pretty basic sort of just hard sort of dark bass, hard kick and sort of, you know, like classic like dance pop production. Nothing too crazy. I think where all the fun stuff happens is like in the vocal production more than anything. And there's so much automation, so many like reverb swells and throws and weird little effects on the vocal that make it interesting. There's also like a sort of quite a prominent vocoder that comes in halfway through the chorus in the first chorus, and it's there in the second chorus, and it just adds to this like weird industrial robotic vibe that kind of is juxtaposed to the sort of sweetness of Ina's vocal and then Kylie's vocal, if that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. And there's sort of, when I was listening today, I hadn't really noticed it before, there's almost a I hope I'm not imagining this, because if I am, I might need to get my ears checked. Almost like a pulsating effect, like the sound getting louder and quieter a little bit. Now, am I going insane or is that accurate?
Which sound? Just in general?
Just in general. Like, especially I noticed it in the intro. It sounds like sort of the waves of the sound is sort of like getting a little bit louder and a little bit quieter.
Yeah, that's the sidechain effect that is on, not only on that sound, but that sidechain is when you route a compressor to the kick. So it, every time the kick hits, it pushes the sound down. So it dips mm-hmm. on every beat of the bar. So you sort of hear that.
Yes.
And that's probably what you're hearing. Okay. And that's on that synth and that, but it's also on the vocal throughout, and it just sort of glues everything together in a sort of pulsing way. So you're not crazy.
That's good to know. Now I don't have to get my ears checked or get new headphones. So thank you for both.
Great. Everyone's a winner.
Sparing me the inconveniences of both of those things. Okay. So I'm guessing, was it the simple act of sending Kylie the demo with Ina's vocals over it, and then she recorded her own? Was that how you did that?
Basically, yeah. I sent her the track and Ina's vocal parts separated out so she could hear exactly what each part was doing. And then she recorded it all herself in a hotel room on her laptop, which is just so iconic. And then she sent me her session back, and I sort of went through it and picked my favorite bits. And she's so cool about just trusting me with decisions vocally. And it was pretty much there. Like, after the first version I did, I think we were all pretty happy with it. There were a few tiny little changes, and there was a point where it wasn't going to be as sexual. We were sort of maybe trying to water it down, but then that just didn't feel as fun. So we just went back to the original.
Yeah, definitely. What were the alternative lyrics then?
That is a great question.
Take off all my socks.
Yeah. I mean, some people would be into that, unfortunately.
They probably would, especially Kylie.
Cater for everyone. I mean, I think it was it was the take off all my clothes lyric was something like get to know me close or something that was just not as good. And the sort of the t-shirt lyric was, we were trying to make it less. Again, I don't know who was sort of suggesting these things, but I don't think it came from any of us. And again, that sort of ageism, sexism thing, I sort of felt it even then. I was like, why can't Kylie be hot? You know, like, why can't she sing those things? So there was a bit of push and pull with that. And eventually we ended up just sticking with the original. And the irony of it is now that are you familiar with Kids Bop?
It sounds familiar.
It's like a US thing, but they remake sort of pop hits with right. kids yes. singing it. And obviously they all need to be super PG because it's like for 5-year-olds or whatever. Yeah. But so now we sort of have a version. There is a version out there that is very tame, but it's sung by a bunch of sort of under 10-year-olds. So it's really cute, but also terrifying.
Yeah, I'll bet. Not where it is intended to be, but I love that for them. Probably making the Americans go crazy. This gay anthem reaching their shores, converting everyone. But more power to the damp town.
Yeah. And now the children too. Yeah.
Yes, think of the children. God, what have you done? What have you started, Peter? You can never go over there again now.
It's just what I do.
Yeah, it's just what you do. I love that. And did you do anything specific in terms of production or effects on Kylie's vocals that she sent back to you?
They're pretty heavily affected. I mean, there's the sidechain thing happening throughout, which I mentioned. A lot of trickery with reverb, super long reverbs, and sort of automating them so they cut quite harshly, and so it'll be super open and then absolutely dry. And even in the, I'm just looking at it now, but the automation of the reverb send in the chorus is like an 8-second reverb, so super long, whole thing. But it's just going on the one and the three, so kind of like bah, 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 bah. And it fills up so much space in the track. It kind of feels like part of the instrumental almost. And then her lead vocal is sort of quite heavily saturated, so a bit crunchy, and it's also got sort of a lot of like widening width effects on it. It's got like a doubler on it, and a bit of chorus, and again that just makes it feel, you know, it just adds to the sort of trippy vibe, but it means you can get away with this just one vocal, as opposed to having, you know, having her do doubles and things. It's just one super hard vocal that is, that feels really wide, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense. And you touched on it earlier, that kind of deep, I don't know what it is, like a pitch down, per damn, it's what you hear first and it's repeated, yeah. You know, sort of chopped up. How was that effect achieved?
It was just pitch shifted down an octave. So it's just her lead vocal. I mean, it actually might even be Ina's original lead vocal. It's just pitched down, saturated again. It's got quite a lot of reverb on it, and then it's sort of pitched around throughout the track to fit each chord. So the dum 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 moves around to fit the chords.
Okay. And when you listen back, if you do listen back to it, I'm sure you don't need to go out of your way. Do you ever hear things, or just in any songs really, that you think, or if I could go back, I might just change that or tweak that little thing? Or are you absolutely fine with when it's done, and it was a moment in time? Or do you ever feel like, I'd love to just change that?
I think that would, I definitely used to think like that, but I think I've in the last few years, definitely just come to peace with things being, you know, like the beauties in the imperfection, kind of, and, you can tweak something forever. So I think I just, again, try to get to that state of mind of like Joe Schmo walking down the street. Does it feel good? Yeah. Cool. It's probably done. Like don't overcook it. Mm-hmm. And especially in this, there's really not many elements in this production. So I think luckily I caught myself before I destroyed it.
That's very good. And you were mentioning, you know, obviously the manipulations that were done to the vocals. Is there one piece of studio tech, maybe a plugin, you know, that really stands out to you as having played a key part in shaping Padam Padam, and in particular Colin's vocals?
Yeah, there's two. I would say the two that I use the most in this are Little Altar Boy, which is this Sound Toys plugin that is like a pitch shift plugin, but it also has a drive function on it, so you can sort of add a bit of saturation to vocals, and that's used a lot. That's done, that's doing the majority of the pitching in this. And then the other thing is a Waves doubler, which is basically on the lead vocal in the chorus, which is pretty unconventional and probably like a mix engineer's nightmare, but that's doing the sort of the weird wide robotic vibe. It's basically acting as a chorus, and it's kind of like pitching and delaying a vocal left and right from the lead vocal, so it's sort of super tight still, but there's a little bit of subtle width there.
And why would you say it's unconventional to use the doubler in the way that you did, making it a
just because it's literally it's the way I'm looking at it now, and this is not what I would normally do, but it's literally just shoved on before the compressor and before the like lead vocal bus EQ and everything that is meant to make is sort of like, so it's doing its effect, but then it's also being slammed through an 1176, which is probably like kicking up the compressor's kind of kicking up the little delay that the doubler's making, so it sort of adds even more to the width of the vocal, if that makes sense. Like just at the ends of the words, it'll be kicking up, and it won't be as obvious when she's singing through a word, but just right at the end, you hear, because the compressor's releasing, the wider vocals kind of kick up. I'm not sure if I'm explaining that well, but it's just weird to put it there before the compressor and right. The EQ and stuff.
Okay. Well, it works. It's clearly working.
Yeah.
All the awards, a Grammy in the post, potentially, or over the fence or in the bin from every... So it's all good.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. There aren't any rules, really. I think that's the, you know, just muck around and then until it sounds cool.
Yeah, nicely finished there. Let's talk nominations. That seamlessly leads me on. You are also nominated for an MPG award. No, two MPG awards, excuse me. So producer of the year and writer producer of the year. That is this year. So how does that feel to be nominated? Yeah. And it's by industry peers as well, the MPGs.
Yeah, I think that's what's so cool about it. I mean, it's kind of, yeah, it's, again, it all, any award just feels mildly ridiculous to me, but that is, it's sort of the best kind of honor when you can be up for something that is nominated by people who you work with or admire, you know, like peers in the industry. That means a lot. So very grateful.
Well, I hope you have a wonderful evening. Maybe you can practice
a
potential speech, even though it's not televised. So you'll be up for the
I'll just try not to black out. If that happens.
I bet they've got more booze on the table than at the Grammys. Do they have booze on the table at Grammys?
Yeah. There's booze everywhere, but it's also just way more chaotic at the Grammys because it's sort of like you for that pre-televised bit, you just sort of, there's not even allocated seating, so you just sit wherever you like. And I was just sat like randomly with Ellie Goulding and some other Brits, and just sort of shit, we were just like, this will do, I guess. And
Brits
we were just sat there. Yeah.
I love that. Well, I have to say, good luck on the new Kylie music then. Are you feeling the pressure to create, you know, another Padam Padam moment?
Not until you said that. Mm. No, I mean, I don't try not to think of it. Think about music like that, because that's sort of enough to drive anyone crazy. And I just think Padam was its own thing, and it's lived its own life. And the new stuff is so fun as well, in its own way. It's not, we can't try and do Padam again. It won't work. So, it's kind of, I'm just excited to watch Kylie continue to be an icon.
She is always going to be an icon. And are you even allowed to say, when could this potential new song or whatever it is you're working on be out or see the light of day?
I don't know, is the honest truth.
Safe answer.
Good answer. Yeah, I genuinely don't actually know. So, okay. There you go.
Well, all of London, including me, I'm going to be hearing Kylie in Hyde Park. So I'll be there padamming along this summer.
On the way?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Are you going to be there?
When is it? It's
good question.
BST,
I'm
going
to say July, but I actually can't remember when it is, to be honest.
I don't know. Yeah, if I'm not in LA, I'll definitely be there. And I'm actually going to go and see her play. She's been doing this Vegas residency in for the last few months, I think. So I'm going to try and catch the last show of that in a few weeks. But I'd love to see it on home soil too. That would be so fun. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. There's something really good about those, you know, Hyde Park BST gigs, aren't there? There's just the summertime. Everyone's in a good mood. Probably because everyone's been day drinking, but it's usually quite a good crowd there, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get on the rosés in Kylie's honour.
Yes.
I mean, surely she can hook us up with a couple of bottles of rosé.
Oh my God. I bet you have access to the cool VIP bar. They've got to have some of that shit in there, definitely.
I don't know. I don't know. Text me.
Are we drinking G&T's out of a can that they're overselling me and pouring into a plastic cup?
Okay.
Good time. I'm happy with that, though. I'm happy with that. I get to see Kylie Minogue. Okay, Peter, I am going to say thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. I'm sure you've been asked about this a lot, and we'll be asked about this a lot again. So I do appreciate it that you're having to retell this many times. But it's really fascinating just to get a little insight into the songs that we all know and can't get out of our heads. That was an accidental
pun,
actually.
Nice.
That was actually an accident.
See what you did there.
Yeah, I see what I did there.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks again. And
Pleasure.
I'd love to catch up another time.
Oops. Yeah, I'll see you at BST.
Yeah, see you at BST. See you at the bar with the rosé.
See you at the bar.
All right, thank you.
All right, nice one.
Bye.
Headliner Radio, supporting the creative community.